Hello and welcome to another episode of the Choose Strong podcast. I am your host, Sally McCray, and I am joined by the marathon finisher, Edward James McCray. Let's go. Let's hear it for Eddie, guys. Everyone that's on YouTube, just go ahead and clap your hands. And for those of you that have already started running, how hyped are you right now? We are going to be talking about running Eddie's race, all of the details surrounding it, how his body was feeling before going into the race, what he was feeling during the race, what it was like to have me screaming like a wild ape all along the course.
Wild ape.
You're going to get the full details. And I just know that as you run along step by step, kilometer by kilometer, yes, shout out to our internationals.
Kilometers. Uh-huh. I see what you did there.
The right way to measure distance. You guys are going to not only be getting stronger, but you are going to be giggling alongside with us. You're going to get some great encouragement today, but also know that you are a part of the strongest community around, the Choose Strong community, strong mind, strong body, strong love. And we got all three of that wrapped up in today's episode. So first, a big shout out to our youth listeners. Kids, we love having you here. We know that many times you only hang out for the intro, which is totally fine because we know that adults can often talk a little bit too much. But we love just to remind you that you are strong, you matter, you are loved, and we are so glad that you're part of this community too. We also want to give a big shout out to everyone doing the extracurricular activities. I think it's I don't think it goes amiss, Eddie, that on the weekly people tell us when they are listening to the podcast, and we'll get people that are like sewing.
Yeah.
They are painting a wall in their house. I mean, what was one that you got recently?
Well, I think we talked about the last one. She was making her coffee. Like she was making roasting coffee. Beans.
Roasting beans.
Pretty awesome.
I love it. I just love that Eddie and I have been able to share in the days of your lives, no matter what that looks like, however it is that you spend the time listening to podcasts, we get to come along for the ride. So thank you so much. Eddie, before we dive into everything marathon, LA Marathon, I just want to know right now, how are you feeling? How is your body today?
It's surprisingly pretty good. I feel I'm sore, which, you know, is expected, I think, with all the pounding on that pavement for way too long. But I think overall, it's not bad. Not bad.
You have a big smile on your face, and I'm thinking that cheeky smile is because you beat my LA Marathon time by 2 minutes.
I probably would have refused to do this episode if I did not beat your time.
Two minutes.
Yes.
As a way to just kind of like rub it in my face. Yeah. You know, I'm not going to smash it. I'm going to get so close that you think I'm not going to beat it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to beat it by 2 minutes.
We'll get to that later. Yeah. But you know what? Let's get to the people. Let's get to the people before we get on.
The best part of this podcast.
That's right
here.
That is right. So I'm going to, like I always do, read some Choose Strong podcast love that people gave us.
I'm going to go off on a tangent right now.
Gosh.
You know, shocker.
Shocker.
What is this Choose Strong hat you're wearing?
You know what? This is a hot off the press Choose Strong black hat with some yellow pop of the Choose Strong and the Nike.
It's reversed.
Yeah, it's the reverse yellow hat, which this thing's, I'm not going to lie, it's pretty fire.
Well, pretty fire.
And for those of you now wondering how can we get one of those, we don't know yet because we only have a few and we don't know how we're going to let those roll out. So we're still working on a game
plan.
You're
on the YouTube right now. You can see what he is wearing. But,
yeah. And you can see my beautiful medal. Look at that thing.
I love that you're wearing your medal.
This is the only time I'm ever going to bring this out. Just to show. It's so heavy.
Medals these days are no joke. I mean, you know, this idea, I remember back in the 90s, people were like, if you don't know what to do with your medals, you know, make them Christmas ornaments and hang them on your tree. I'm like, I'm sorry. What How tree? Big is your tree? Do you have a redwood tree in your house? Because those are the only branches that would be strong enough to hold the weight
yeah, this seems a hefty of one.
These metals. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're doing a 10K, a 5K. Those things weigh about a solid 19 pounds.
Yeah.
Like they are. These aren't school ribbons.
This is about as heavy as Mackenzie weighed when she was born. I was like... All right, so back to the regular
scheduled podcast.
Program without program. Interruptions. All right, so I got a little love from Texas. Mm. This one comes from the Apple Podcast world from Missing Loom. She said, "My husband's the runner. I'm not athletic by any means, but I love watching y'all's podcast with him while we stretch together after his workouts. Aww. Thanks for being such a positive and encouraging voice and sharing your heart." Mm. Man, stretching together.
I know. I'm like, hey, if you have a body, you are an athlete.
That's right.
So well done.
Missing
and getting this stretching and mobility is absolutely vital.
Yeah.
I'm learning this as we move through the years in our life. Mm-hmm. We were on the pier today.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, there is an older crowd that comes out early in the morning. We went out for an early morning walk. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of walkers. We see cyclists, runners. We don't see a lot of kids. I mean, right. It's maybe because they're getting ready to go to school and stuff like that. But we were kind of making that remark of like, man, it's so peaceful early in the morning along the coast. A lot of people walking their coffee. That's what you and I were doing.
Yep.
But we came across this elderly couple that was doing mobility. They're standing next to the railing on mm-hmm. the pier, and they were doing all this mobility with their ankles and their hips. And I mean, I don't think that they were a day younger than 70.
I was going to say they were 95.
Moving, the way they were moving was incredible.
I could not do what they were doing.
We were giggling about that, right? Yeah. Like, that is amazing.
That's impressive.
And also kind of making it our goal that we absolutely need to be like them
yeah.
when we are their age.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we want to keep moving for the rest of our life. But the stretching... mobility exercises, that definitely is not something that is only if you are training for a race or to be in competition or if you, you know, you regularly like to work out at the gym. That's something just to get you moving better in yeah. your everyday life. So to this wonderful woman who has written in and says that she stretches with her husband, well done.
Well done. Yeah, it was funny because yesterday when I went to the gym, I stretched and rolled out and just felt good to just lay down and stretch a little bit. And I overheard these guys.
Did you just say I went to the gym and I
laid down?
What felt good was to lay down?
these guys that were next to me, they were probably 20 years old, maybe 20, and they were stretching also. And after they were done, I heard one of the guys say, "Man, stretching feels so good. I just need to do it more often," you know? So even as 20-year-olds to 95-year-olds, it's a good thing. All right, Missing Loom, appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, the next one is from Deuce, and Deuce is from YouTube. So I don't know if that's his real name or not, but yeah. I was really struggling this week. I felt like giving up on my marathon training and everything, really. But I sat at the park, and I heard a little voice say, "Chew strong, do the work." And then away I went. Aww. Just want to say God bless you both. You're very helpful in this current season.
That's super cool.
Deuce, way to get out there and chew strong and did the work. I like it. Big shout out to Deuce.
That's
all right.
Super cool.
That was some quick shout outs. Now, I also we like to highlight those that are out there in the community doing some good stuff and choosing strong and, you know, like you said at the beginning, strong body, strong mind, strong love. And so I always try to pull a few of those that come in from either the Instagram or emails or the Facebook community and highlight them because they're all out there doing the work like we all are. And some have some pretty, you know, deep stories and some are a little lighter, but they're all similar in the vein of doing the work and choosing strong. So the first one I wanted to highlight and read was Danny. Danny gave us an email. And Danny said, I only found out your YouTube and then podcast at the end of last year, but you've both made such a positive impact. I also lost my mom to cancer almost 2 years ago now. It's been a lot, but listening and watching your story and the Choose Strong campaign that you did helped so much with the healing process. And because of you guys, I just finished a 5K today after over a year of not running. I participated with family and a couple friends, and it felt so good crossing that finish line. You've also helped inspire me with my pottery business, Danny Soul Art, and getting back to making art consistently again after almost 2 years off. I love listening to your podcast while I work in my studio. Thank you from the bottom of my heart and all you for all you guys do and the love and inspiration that you share. It means more than I can say. Much love.
Now, I have a huge appreciation for art. We've had many artists over the years capture and create, whether it's like a redoing a picture from one of my photos, doing something that's like a logo, whether it's a Choose Strong or Do the Work. Danny, I'm just throwing that out there. If you want to collaborate on a piece of art, let me know.
Sally wants a full life-size clay image of herself.
I'd like a 9-foot statue of me for my home.
Oh, we would all love that in our house.
Everyone would love that. So good.
Danny, we do thank you, though, for sharing that. That's pretty powerful, especially just finishing a 5K after not running after a whole year. It's pretty impressive to get back out there, and I'm sure your mom would be definitely proud. All right. Last one I have is from Kara. Also sent an email to us. Kara said, "Hi, Sally and Eddie. So I've been listening to your podcast for about a year now, and you guys have truly changed my perspective on life and fitness. Thank you for the encouragement to help me get through the loss of my mom this past April, who was only 58 and passed away from breast cancer. I truly have a different perspective of Choose Strong now. I've also been dealing with some random injuries since getting back into running, and I really appreciate the perspective of how doing the work can mean whatever you need it to be. Like cleaning your house, taking rest days, taking care of your mental health, etc. You guys are an inspiration to many. Thank you."
I love that.
Yeah. Another heartfelt one. Just a lot of stories like that that people, you know, resonate with losing someone and how it relates to their fitness and their mental health and their life and how they are able to push through and choose strong because of the podcast and some of the stuff that you share. So that's pretty cool. So thank you guys for writing those in and sharing those with us, as I'm sure it encourages other people to hear what you guys are going through and what you guys have gone through. So, all right, that's all I got on my end. So what do you think?
I thought that
jump into LA Marathon talk.
I would love to jump in to the LA Marathon talk. But before we do that, Eddie,
okay.
Before we dive in to the marathon talk, we celebrated Isaiah's 16th birthday.
Yes, we did.
We had about 15 16-year-olds over here.
Yes, we did.
Last weekend. Now, our kids' birthdays are 2 weeks apart. This weekend, our daughter will be celebrating her, well, she'll be having her 18th birthday party.
Yeah.
We'll also have a group of teenage girls here.
Uh-huh.
And we will be celebrating with family as well, the birthdays of our two kiddos. One of the things that I realized on the morning of Isaiah's birthday was this is the last year that both our kids we'll wake up together under the same roof on their birthday.
Why are you bringing that up right now?
Well,
it's a
the reason why I am bringing this up is because it has a lot to do with the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
That we had it going into the LA Marathon.
Quite a weekend, you're
and
right.
And I think that this is something that we forget. When you are working full time, when you have a family, when you are building up towards a goal, I think that parents, especially, when you're getting around and doing all the things, planning parties. I know we, I'll get to the next part. Mackenzie also had an event.
Mm-hmm.
It can sometimes feel like an uphill battle to reach a finish line. And it isn't always because, oh, I need to get my workout in.
Mm-hmm.
It's like life is wild and busy. And what I was realizing in the craziness, because from Friday to Sunday after you cross the finish line, I told you, I go, that just felt like one long day.
Yeah.
I think I maybe got a total of 7 hours of sleep between Friday and Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to dive in to you too, how you were feeling, what was going on with you as well. But what I realized in all of that was how incredibly special and meaningful every event that we were doing within those 3 days. And it involved Isaiah, something really special for him. Mackenzie had a very special moment, and then you did too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we were giggling about it because I was like, of course it all happens in one weekend,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But how many times have I said that too? Why does everything always, you know, happen at once? Or is it that when we open up our hearts and our mind to opportunity around us, when we are living actually full lives and doing all we can to be present, that actually is more often how it is.
Yeah.
And I think that it's not an uncommon agreement that people will say, I'm really busy. I'm feeling tired.
Yep.
And how can we get the best out of ourselves when we are in that season? Not only just as parents, I'm thinking too, people that are listening who are in college and working toward a goal. I'm thinking of people who are single or getting ready to start a family. And I think that when our kids were little and we're like, oh my gosh, it's so busy, it was easy at times to say, oh, when this season is over, I am going to tackle this goal.
Yeah.
When the kids are older, I'm going to tackle this goal. But the reality is you don't get less busy as life goes on. That's
right.
Not how it works. Tell me someone who gets less busy as life goes on. I suppose, and we haven't reached this yet, when we reach the age of retirement, but I always say I'll never retire. When we reach the age of our retirement years, when we're grandparents, maybe that's when life slows down, or is that something that we choose? So we'll save that for another day. But I think as we went into the marathon weekend for you, I was trying my best to savor Friday, Isaiah's birthday. I was trying my best to savor Saturday, Mackenzie being invited to a big invitational where she was hoping to break her own personal record in the mile. There was lots of pro athletes there too. So it was a really exciting night. And then you on Sunday were gearing up to run your first marathon. And that's kind of how I'm teeing this off. Is it wasn't like we had this really sweet, restful, like taper and we had a relaxing race weekend. We enjoyed the expo and hung out. We had a great pasta dinner the night before. We got to bed early. We didn't do any of that.
No.
There was none of that. So that's where I'd love to kick this off, is having you just invite our listeners into not only your headspace, but what life was like for you the week leading up to the race, physically, mentally. It's important.
Yeah. Well, the week leading up to it, my hip was bothering me like really bad. Mm-hmm. So I had the plans of running a little bit and kind of doing the taper thing and you know, kind of hearing from you what I should do. But mm-hmm. I just really wasn't able to pull it off because my hip was bothered me so much and I didn't know what was going on with it. And so I was like, I just probably should stay off of it completely. So I just did a lot of stretching and did some bikes stuff. And, mm-hmm. You know, so that I think was the physical part of it. And then, yeah, we, like you said, the weekend hit, we had just a ton going on with Isaiah on Friday. And that was when we jetted up to LA in the morning, got there when the expo opened, went through the expo pretty quick.
Tell us a little bit about the expo, though. You are definitely brushing over that because
what?
The, first of all, the expo was at the Dodger Stadium.
Yes.
So this was an hour drive.
Yeah, almost an
hour.
Oh,
from
it was
our house.
An hour. That's right. It was.
This was Isaiah's 16th birthday. Really big day in our home. We did a big birthday breakfast in the morning.
Yeah.
We had a massive party planned for the evening.
Yeah.
And so our day, as soon as we got up, was incredibly busy.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I got into a little squabble. Mm-hmm. And you're like, fine, you don't need to come with me. We're just being real here, people. Yes,
I
Eddie
told you you didn't
argue.
Need to go. I told you
Eddie
over
and
over, you do not need to go with me.
Couple. No.
I'm a big boy. I can go to LA, get my bib and come home.
Yeah. So we had a little squabble. It was definitely rooted in stress of, you know, I got to do this and this and this and this and the party. And then I felt really terrible because, as I said earlier, I'm trying to make the most of every event of each person in the family. And I was really looking forward to going to the expo with you. I was like, that's such an exciting part in the lead up to your, to a race, regardless if it's your first race, 100th race or what. And I wanted to have that experience with you. So, we ended up going to LA together. I think what I said was like, well, you're going to need me to go in the carpool anyway. So, but really I felt like really bad. And I was like, no, like we're going to go have a good time. And, but yeah,
I'm glad you came.
I know, right?
Thanks for coming. Yeah.
Right? We are going to do there is going to be a chunk of the YouTube episode on my channel.
Mm-hmm.
You will get to see Eddie at the expo, his race and all of that. So if you don't follow my YouTube channel yet, make sure you subscribe to it. You just can type in Sally McRae. We'll put the link in here for it, but people will be able to visually see what the expo was like. But what was that like for you? I mean, I think driving up, you kept on saying how many memories you have of the Dodger Stadium. You are absolutely enamored with the fact that they've kept a lot of the original signs. It's very nostalgic when you go to that stadium. What do you love so much about that stadium?
Yeah, Dodger Stadium it holds a special place in my heart just because I've been going there since I was really young. Mm-hmm. And had opportunities to go on the field with my aunt, you know, when I was 7, 8 years old and mm-hmm. meet players. So I've been a Dodger fan forever. And a lot of that at the stadium, just this hasn't changed. Like a lot of the signage, it just has that old school feel. They've updated a lot of the inside stuff, but the outside still looks very like you're in 1985, you know? So I love going there. I don't go up there enough, but it does bring back some cool memories. So yeah, to go to the expo and have it right there in the parking lot was pretty cool. And then, you know, you're just looking up and you're seeing the stadium right there and the Dodger sign and pretty cool venue for sure. But yeah, I mean, it's just— Did I meet anyone there? We met some people a lot of people that love you.
What?
That came up and said,
we met a lot of fans of the Choose Strong podcast community.
Yeah, no, we did.
I want to highlight those people who went out of their way.
Yes.
To come and say hello to us. There was volunteers that were working, people that were just at the expo. I'll tell you what, I genuinely understand it's not always easy just to walk straight up to someone and say hello.
Yeah.
And it's important people understand. We so appreciate that.
We do.
We love meeting people
in
the community and just connecting with you. So to everyone who came and said hello to Eddie and I, we really appreciate that. That made the whole expo so much fun for us.
Totally.
Was just connecting. I mean, there was, I think, a couple of people with yellow hats and yellow clothes. And Choose Strong. So that was super cool.
Yeah, that was cool to connect with some of those people that listen to the podcast and either we're working the expo or we're actually running too, which is cool. So yeah, that was the expo and grabbed the bib and headed home and started prepping for Isaiah's birthday party.
You got a lot of handouts at the expo. At the expo, we had a.
Sally made me buy a shirt, so I'm not a big expo guy, but Sally made me buy some LA Marathon shirt. That
the reason why I thought the LA Marathon, like going to the store, I never do that. There's parts of the
why'd you make me do it then?
There's parts of there's something about your first marathon,
oh.
And everyone that's listening that has run a marathon before will agree with me.
Okay.
They will.
All right. All right.
You never forget your first one.
Yeah.
You just don't. Like, whether it goes really well or you don't end up finishing or you had like the best day ever, there's just something about lining up at the start line of something that seemed so impossible.
Yeah.
I mean, marathons are hard.
Yeah.
And I think that I just wanted to commemorate that and celebrate that with you. And I thought, I'm going to get him a shirt. And he's probably going to keep this shirt for a while. The reason why I like that shirt so much is because it was written in the Dodger
font.
It and it had shirt. And it had like the stadium on it. Like there was all these pieces about it. And I was like, I love that it encompassed both the marathon and the Dodger branding. And I just thought it was such a cool piece. So
yeah,
we got that cool shirt. The expo, we got a lot of fun handouts from electrolytes to pasta to, I don't know. We just did all the things.
We did all the things.
We did all the things that I don't normally do when I...
Actually, we even got some green LA Marathon socks.
Yes, because it was on St. Patrick's Day.
St. Patrick's Day, right.
So, yeah.
Those are cool.
Yeah. Pausing here for a quick message from Inside Tracker. The path to better health isn't rocket science. It's health science. For something as valuable as your health, there's no reason to leave anything to chance. So whether you want to improve your heart health, cognition, metabolism, sleep, stress levels, or overall health span, Inside Tracker reveals the exact areas of your health that need improvement through comprehensive blood testing, DNA analysis, sleep and fitness tracker data, and your current daily habits. Inside Tracker's scientists have shifted through the research so that you don't have to. So stop playing guessing games. When it comes to your health and longevity, you can save 20% on all of Inside Tracker tests with the code SALLY at checkout.
Yeah, so that was the expo, fun times, and got our stuff and went back in the car for another hour back home and got on with the weekend, you know. Friday night, big party.
A big party.
16-year-old boy.
Yeah, and that was really fun. And then the next morning I had to get in a 3.5-hour run,
mm-hmm.
a trail run, get my training in. And then when I got back from that, we made our way all the way down to San Juan Capistrano to the 10 Sound Running event.
Yeah.
An invitational. There's a lot of professional and, athletes there trying to get their standard for the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
Mackenzie ran this last year. It was her first time. A year ago, that she broke 5 minutes in the mile.
Yeah,
her goal was to break 4:50.
Yeah,
she came up short on that. She was pretty bummed, and I told her, "You are absolutely allowed to be bummed. Like that's okay."
Mm-hmm.
But she had a phenomenal race. I mean, she raced very well. She's very strong. This is also the beginning of the season, so it's always a toss-up, I think, with track athletes, high school in particular.
Whenever you're bummed at a 4:56 mile. That's like,
she is so fast. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. She had a great day. We were so impressed by the number of kids that came out to support her.
Yeah. That was cool.
That was super cool. So, but she did not race until 9 p.m. and San Juan Capistrano is well over an hour away from LA.
Yes.
So, by the time we left, it was 10 o'clock. 10:30 at night, we went and got gas, grabbed a drink and like some electrolytes or whatever,
uh-huh.
and made our way to a small little hotel.
Sketchy
in
hotel.
Chinatown.
In LA.
And yeah, I think that we were able to get to bed about 12:30.
Yeah, it was around midnight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Alarm was at what, 4 a.m.?
I believe it was at 4. I think I was wide awake at 3:30.
Yeah, so 4 hours.
I think
of sleep.
I fell asleep till like 12:30 or 1.
Okay.
You and I only got a few hours of sleep,
yeah.
So it mm-hmm. was not an ideal way to go into a marathon. But we had already talked about it the day before. You know, the two nights before your race is when you want the best sleep. It's mm-hmm. okay if you don't get great sleep the night before a race. A lot of times you don't because of nerves. You can't stress about that. That's why your whole week of taper is very important. You're trying to bank as much sleep as possible.
Yeah, between my hip issue the week before and this whole busy weekend, I was just trying to bank all these excuses of why my marathon running debut is going to suck.
No. No, that's not how it did not suck. It was an incredible day.
Yeah.
And I want to dive into just how the day went. So we woke up, we left the hotel about 4:30.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we were a little, I mean, I know at first you had said before we got to bed, you're like, yeah, we'll probably leave like at 6. And I'm like,
the race is at 7.
There's 26,000 people going to the Dodger Stadium. You probably want to get there a little bit early before 6 a.m. But I think part of that was because you knew you were in a corral that was going to take you 15, 20 minutes before you would even pass the start. I mean, we tried getting you in a corral that fit your pace per mile.
I'm an idiot and forgot to like sign up in January for that. So that was my fault.
So Eddie was put into a corral that was in the very, very back.
It's called open. Yeah.
Just open. Yeah. So what we did was we were a little nervous because I didn't sign up for shuttles. I was like, I really was set on driving you as close as I possibly could. And then we realized they actually had, and for those of you that are interested in doing LA Marathon, they were very dialed in with parking and a drop-off zone.
Yeah, they had a great system.
It was such a good system. It wasn't bad at all. I mean, we went right in. Obviously, we were there early. But we pulled into that parking spot just a little bit before 5 a.m. I decided to – you were like, no, just do the drop-off. I'm like, I'm not dropping you off for 2.5 hours. Like, I'll sit in the parking lot with you for an hour. And
how long did it take you to get out of there with everybody?
It took me about 4 minutes to exit. Yeah, because where you and I parked, that was probably like where people who were running the race parked.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was that massive drop-off zone. So
that's not bad.
Yeah. I knew that if I had just dropped you off, you'd sitting for 2.5 hours outside. And you were running it by yourself. Like you had chosen not to link up with anyone and just... Yeah. So we sat in the parking lot for like an hour, and it was really funny because as soon as, it was a little bit past 6, and you're like, all right, I'm going to head over there. And within a minute of you getting out of the car, someone recognized you.
Yeah. As soon as I got out of the car, there was a car next to us.
I was already gone. Like I dropped you off and left.
The car right beside that, a guy was getting his stuff together out of his trunk. And he looks over and he's like, Eddie? And I was like, oh, hey, man. And come to find out, it was a guy. I've never met him, but his name's Chris. And he was just stoked to we got to see each other. And he said he listened to the podcast. And
yeah.
I was like, oh, that's really cool. And we took a picture. And then I started walking over to the masses getting ready to line up for the race. Stretched out and went to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How is that waiting? Once the race started, so the race started at 7 a.m.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to actually get up to the start line?
It took me almost 20 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah.
And were you just standing the whole time or was it just slow walking?
So once I started seeing everybody like migrate over to that section, that's when I was like, I should probably start to head over there, you know, because I didn't know what was going on. So I slowly went over there and you just kind of stand and you're waiting. And then I didn't stand for very long. And then once it started moving, it took about almost 15, 20 minutes, I think, to finally hit the start line. So it was cool. I mean, I was just stretching. I had almost an hour. So like I was stretching. I ate a banana. I was drinking some electrolytes and just kind of, you know, moving the legs and went to the bathroom. And it was cool because I had three different ladies come up to me and they were obviously looking for you, but they're like, Eddie's here. We'll talk to him. that were also running it. And we took pictures and they said, you know, it was pretty cool because they were coming up and saying, oh man, Sally means so much to us and, you know, read her book and listened to the podcast. And so that was pretty cool. They came up. And then I also met a guy at the start line who I think the yellow hat that I was wearing gave it away, you know, as a kind of, it stands out. And he comes up, he's like, hey man, like my name's Caesar, and he's a cop in Hollywood. And that was his first LA marathon too. So we got to talk about, you know, kind of getting ready for it since we were both running it together. And he listens to the podcast too. And so it was cool to connect with, you know, some of these people, at the beginning of the race, at the start. And, you know, right before I finally got to go run. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, it took about 15, 20 minutes to finally get to the start line and push play, and then away we went.
Mm-hmm. Now, what were your goals for race morning? You said that you knew already going in that it was going to be uncomfortable. So you were prepared for that. You had some issues with your soleus. You had some issues with the that ligament going across your hip.
Yeah.
What was your mindset going in? Like, were you kind of bummed going in? Were you just like, dude, I'm going to be fine. I'm going to finish this no matter what. I mean, I think a lot of people listening would love to kind of know what your mindset was, because I think most often than not, we have to make the decision for ourselves. Am I going to line up at this start line, or am I going to try to get better and maybe just pick another race that's a couple months down the road?
Yeah. Yeah. So going in, like I mentioned, I had a hip issue, that was really, really painful, really, really bothering me for the week leading up to it. But prior to that, I did have a soleus issue where my calf kind of was strained, a bit. I did a 20 miler, which was awesome. Got that taken care of mm-hmm. a couple weeks prior. And then you had me doing a 23 miler, mm-hmm. The next weekend.
Yeah.
And so, but leading up to that, you had me do, some running on the treadmill, like some faster fartlek stuff. And I think I might've pushed mm-hmm. it a little bit too much. And
do you? Because you're running about 2 minutes faster than I told you to. So.
I was feeling it.
Yeah.
Looking back, I probably shouldn't have done that, but I was feeling it that day. And I think that was the day I must have had like a lot of coffee. I was like, I'm just going. I'm going for it.
Just charging.
Yeah, charging. So I did not come off of that strong because I felt something on the back of my leg when I was finishing that last one. I was like, oh, I should probably tone it down now. And so, but that was like a Wednesday. And then by Sunday, you told me to run 23 miles. So I went out for my 23, and about 11 miles in, I felt that exact same strain or that soleus pain in my left leg acting up a little bit. And I was like, oh man, this is, and it was actually from 10 to 12 was where it was starting to like get a little bit more painful and a little bit more like piercing. So I was like, I should probably mm-hmm. shut it down because I don't want this to get to a point where I can't run at all. So I remember calling you and I was like, this is what's going on. And you, Coach Sally, said, you know what, let's not go anymore. Mm-hmm. So that was probably 2 weeks before. So I took a whole week off leading up to that, but then I was having this hip issue leading into it, and that really was a bummer because I knew that it was something I could push through. It wasn't like extremely painful, but it was definitely like something that every time I would land on my left leg, I'm like, oh man, that thing's bothering me. But so going into that Sunday morning for the race, I knew that that was going to be an issue just because even when I walked, I felt it and it wasn't like healed. And so going into the race, I'm like, I'm just going to deal with that one. Like that one's just going to be something I'm just, you know, it sucks, but that's just the way it goes. So yeah. So starting, going into the race, that was just something that I knew I had to wrestle with and just to deal with.
So your main goal was finish line.
Yeah, I wanted to finish, but I didn't know like how much I can push it or how painful the hip would eventually be. So I thought I can, you know, I knew I had decent fitness, but
yeah, you did have. Really
I didn't know like how long I can go without the hip like really acting up. So yeah, obviously to finish was a goal, but to be the fastest I could be would be the best. But mm-hmm. Yeah, so I started off in literally like the first half mile coming out of Dodger Stadium parking lot. I already felt the hip, and I was going 10-minute pace just because, you know, there were so many people, and you can only go so fast because you're just locked in. But even at that pace, I was like starting to feel it already. I was like, oh man, this sucks. But it's just one of those things where, you know, you deal with it and you push through it.
What were your strategies to deal with the pain? I mean, knowing that it hit you like half mile in, did you take some anti-inflammatories, painkiller before? Did you change your running gait? Did you just tell yourself, yeah, I'm going to be in pain?
Yeah, kind of all the above. I know we talked about, you know, going, since it was kind of hilly the first 6 miles, and if the hip was to start to bother me, you were encouraging me to really shuffle the feet more and push forward and, you know, lean forward and stuff like that. So I did all those things. I shuffled and it really didn't make a huge difference, to be honest. I did try to change things up with running and the way I would position my foot and move my hips and stuff like that, but it really didn't matter. It was just kind of always there. But I did take some Aleve, I think, before Advil.
So
that was just something I knew was going to be there, and so I just kind of dealt with it. And and to be honest, it wasn't like that big of a deal after like 6-7 miles, because I think it was, I'm like, I just deal with it. I'm just going to, it's there and I'm whatever, right? Like, and it wasn't that big of a deal because I just dealt with it.
I love that. Pain is we focus so much on the physical side of pain. The reality is that just in life, pain actually never ends. Mm-hmm. A lot of it has to do with how much attention we give it at any given time.
Yeah.
And pain changes, has so many different faces and seasons for many of us. Mm. And knowing that we have the power to not give it attention, not make it a focus, and then that is where we're able to discover what we actually can push through. Now, I want to be really clear so that listeners understand. Acute and damaging injuries, I am not an advocate of, yeah, dude, it's a fractured femur, like just keep going, you know, like that is.
My ankle's broken, I'm just going for it.
Yeah, I'm going for it. Yeah, I got rhabdo, but oh well. Definitely not my messaging.
Yeah.
I also am really clear about the fact that everyone's pain threshold is different. Mm-hmm. And many times it has to do with our journey and understanding of pain and how it has been with us from day one. So, you know, a lot of that has to do with the home that you grew up in. I find too that kids who grew up playing physical sports also interact with pain differently. I know this in my coaching. So I've coached athletes who've just started running in their 30s and 40s who only grew up playing instruments. I mean, they weren't allowed to play sports.
Yeah.
When they hit points of discomfort in a race, I mean, that's like new. That's like, whoa, I never had to get out of my comfort zone. Like, why is this so hard? Whereas kids who grew up playing football and were, you know, broke their arm when they were 8 years old and, you know, were always outside and climbing in trees. And it's just, I think it's appreciating the fact that pain has always been in at some point in our life. Mm-hmm. And we can't judge each other in how we respond and how we react to it, but we can have compassion and empathy and understanding. And the one thing we can always do is and encourage people in it, to remind them you are strong, you are capable. And there are many moments and seasons where you also need to rest and give yourself grace and know that you will move past that. Mm-hmm. And we do have this ability to not give that pain so much life.
Yeah.
So there are, I believe these things, they are case by case. With coaching you, Eddie, I felt like so much of what you're dealing with, you chose over and over again to continue to train based on your awareness of the pain and based on what you felt was possible. I think what I understood too was that you were confident that you weren't causing permanent damage.
Right.
Like you actually felt like even with the hip stuff, which was like a muscle or ligament above your hip or whatever, the soleus, those are painful.
Mm-hmm.
26 miles of that is it's not easy. So I just wanted to pause and highlight that because I don't think it would be uncommon for some people to just say, you know what, that is just too much. I'm going to go race sometime in the summertime.
Yeah.
Which I also think is a great option because we have the power and we get the choice to choose what our race goals are. So if we're racing to finish strong, if we're racing to have a PR, if we're racing to have a particular experience, you get the freedom and the choice to do that. No one else gets to dictate it. And at this, in the same breath, you also get to choose to push through discomfort if that particular race means so much to you.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on what your goals are, and in your case, you just wanted to get to that finish line.
Yeah.
So, I think when I saw you at mile 7.
You saw me at 7, yeah.
And you came upon me so quickly that you actually scared me.
Mm.
That was a really exciting section. For those of you that were at the LA Marathon that are listening to this right now, thank you so much for saying hello. Thank you for I lost count of how many times I got to run alongside with people.
So
we
cool.
did selfies and videos and hundreds of hugs.
Yeah.
And some tears. I mean, it was an incredible day just for me. I wasn't thinking about that. I think I had shared that with you. Like I went in so hyper-focused on your experience. I wasn't thinking that I was going to meet people.
Yeah.
So when you came upon me, I was like, oh, there you are.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And you were in good spirits. And I will say from as a coach, you looked really strong.
Yeah.
Like your running gait, everything. Like I was like, as your wife, very worried about you. I was so worried. I was so worried that you were going to get to me at mile 7, either walking, limping, and being disheartened.
Yeah, mile 7 was probably that first 7 miles was my best mile, best part of the race. I felt good. I think those first 6 miles were a lot of undulating kind of hills. And so I was able to change up the running and a little bit more uphill and down, like it wasn't the same, you know, straight flat for an hour or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it was good to change it up and it's kind of weaving through the downtown area and there's a lot to see. And, you know, it was still pretty bunched up those 6 miles, 7 miles. So there's just a lot going on, a lot of distractions. And I felt, besides my hip, I felt pretty good at mile 7. So you saw me probably at my best at mile 7. So yeah, that was cool. And then by mile 9, that is when I felt something in my right soleus.
So and this was brand new.
Yeah, brand new. Never, ever. The past how many months I was running, never felt anything in my right leg. And all of a sudden I felt something in the right soleus. I was like, you've got to be kidding me at mile 9. I was like, unbelievable. There's no way. And
you still had 16.2 miles to go.
I was like, there's no way. And so, and I remember mile from 9 to 10.
2 miles.
Yeah.
Yeah. Math is a little wrong.
Whoops. I remember from mile 9 to 10, I was really thinking about it. And like every time I would step and felt it and I was like, oh man, this is not good. It kept it hurt pretty bad. So unfortunately that is, that was painful the rest of the race. In fact, it's still very bothersome today. So it's very tight and very, and it just, you know, it's just one of those stupid things, right? Like every runner knows that it's just enough to annoy you to get you thinking about it, to, you know, get your run off just a little bit. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure everybody deals with it, but it was just so annoying to have that come up at mile 9, knowing I had so much more to go, you know? So yeah, that was a bummer.
Aside from the physical things that you were dealing with, because I know that we're going to touch a little bit more on how the discomfort grew as the race went on. We are going to go back to that.
Yeah.
What were your fueling strategies, going in, electrolytes, how did that go for you? Because it was every mile there was an aid station, right?
Man, that's what it felt like. Yeah.
I think it's just that every other one or only certain ones had fuel.
Fuel was only twice. I think they only had that like two times late in the race. But yeah, so I think, I mean, for me, I did exactly what I did at the half marathon I did in February, where I took a gel every 4 miles. So okay. Every 4 miles I took one. So 4, 8, 12, 16, 20, and 24. I had a gel in my pouch and I took it. And I didn't really listen to my body. I just kind of was like, every time I hit that mileage, I would do it, whether I wanted it or not. And I don't know if that's wise, but I felt like, you know, every 35, 40 minutes I was having, you know, a gel. So, and then for the electrolytes, I took some every single time, every mile they had, they offered it, I took it.
And they had this electric light called Electrolit.
Electrolit, yes.
So you had a lot of Electrolit.
Yeah.
There's a funny story that you said, and for those of you that have done the LA Marathon, you totally understand this. If you haven't, this is what is signature about the LA Marathon. It is very much a community race. So because you're running through the streets of LA, you're running through all different towns,
neighborhoods,
and neighborhoods, and every neighborhood has its own personality and tone and signature about it. I mean, that's like one of the best things about LA. It's so cool. And the run community there is incredibly strong.
Yeah.
Very strong.
There's clubs. Yeah.
So many run clubs. But just the support, I mean, for the most part, you can run year round outside. And so because of that, the run clubs are very big and they're diverse and there's a lot of them. What I love, about this community is that families come out to spectate and they bring food for the runners.
Yeah.
So you see everything out there. Eddie, tell us some of the things that you saw. And like I said, it's like grandma and grandpa coming out with the kids. And I mean, it's so much fun. But what were some of the things
that Well, one thing I noticed that I was like, should I be having that? Because there were tons and tons and tons of families out there with like cut up oranges and just tons of oranges.
Yeah.
And a ton of people were like beeline they're running to those oranges. And they were throughout the whole course and just tons and tons of oranges. And I was like, should I be taking some of those? Because everybody is taking those. And I was like, I never did, but I was like, maybe I should have taken, like, is that something I should have? Yeah. I don't know, but I never did. But oranges were a huge, huge deal on the course. There were families out there giving fruit snacks and pretzels and, what else did they have?
There was some alcohol and some
there
little
was beer.
There some little Dixie cups.
Dixie cup beer. Yeah. I didn't grab one, but
people
I was tempted.
People holding up pieces of licorice.
Licorice. Yeah. Everything. And
it's really cool though. They're so, and they're cheering loud.
Oh yeah.
They're stoked. Cheering for everyone.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So would you say that most of the miles there was people out, or did you ever feel like there was 20, 30 minutes where you didn't see anyone?
No. There's always people. It was a little sparse, probably the first like
six, 10 miles. Yeah.
Like it was probably the most sparse, but man, after that 13 mile marker, it was just packed with people.
Yeah.
Just so crowded and loud. And I remember I was listening to podcasts. I in fact listened to our podcast. Isn't that funny?
Did you?
Yeah. I was listening to the one about that we did on the for the moms one. And it was so loud at points of the race where I couldn't even hear like what we were talking about, so I missed quite a few parts of it. But
did that help you? Do you feel like having the spectators out, the cheering, the distract, I mean,
it was such a cool, it was so distracting, and people are cheering and it's loud and they're yelling and dancing and there's music. And
LA is known for some interesting costumes and sights and sound. What were some of the wild things you saw out there?
Let's see, costume wise. I mean, I saw
Forrest Gump.
I saw the Jester, who I've seen at
Badwater. The Jester.
But yeah, I saw a lot of like jerseys and
Lakers.
I didn't see a ton of like unique ones, like with my eye. I've seen them now since, you know, on social media. But yeah, there's definitely some characters out there, which, you know, it's just fun. It's just everybody's out there having a good time, you know, taking pictures. And I thought it was super cool to see all the people stopping to give you hugs and you know, take pictures with you. And it's just like people are just eating up the event and the experience. Yeah. And so that was really cool to be a part of. Mm, yeah.
I love that. Yeah. I definitely saw some fun costumes. I mean, there was, Forrest Gump, a couple bananas. Mm-hmm. Our buddy Andy Glaze is out there wearing the Prime bottle. Mm-hmm. I put that up in my stories. There was tutus and long socks and
a lot of green leprechaons because of the day.
Yeah,
there's
a lot of green leprechauns. Yeah, it was St. Patty's Day. So just a lot of spirit. There was a guy juggling with his hands. He was juggling. This is at mile 7 and he was still going.
Still going, yeah.
I thought that was incredible. So our buddy Austin was out there pushing one of the wheelchairs. Mm-hmm. I thought that was amazing. I love seeing that. They started a different time. There was also several runners who were tied to another runner. That's usually the visually impaired. Mm. And there was like two or three of them that were hauling. Hmm. I mean, they were moving so fast. It was the coolest thing.
That is cool.
I was really inspired just all day.
Yeah.
Not only by runners helping other runners achieve a goal, but just people that generally go out there and enjoy it. I mean, the 26 miles is really difficult. And, you know, they're out there just to enjoy the adventure, enjoy the sights and sounds, and just the overall experience of it. You know, as I said earlier, you never forget your first marathon, but I think people that have been a part of the running community for a while, this is why they keep on coming back to the races. They meet good friends at these things. They have experiences that they just don't have in their everyday life. And these are moments, these are days, these are hours that will stick out to them forever.
I think I was thinking back too, where all those people that messaged me and were emailing me and saying, you know, good luck. I really want to thank you guys for saying that. But they were all saying, hey, good luck Sunday, you know, send some nice things. And then they always say, just have fun. And I know I always say that to Mackenzie, you know, she's trained so hard and she's very stressed and wants to go out and run this race and, you know, get the best time that she's ever had in a mile or 2 mile. But then I'm like, you know what, go out and just, you've done the training, you've put in the work, now go have fun and enjoy that. And I remember as I was running, I was trying to think of like all these people saying that to me, like, this is your first time running the marathon, like, enjoy it, have fun, take it all in. And really taking my advice that I give to Mackenzie, just go have fun. I'm not out here obviously to break any records. So I'm out here just to enjoy the experience. And that definitely helped, because you just kind of, you know, you look around and so many people are having so much fun, and whether they're racing or what, you know, they're cheering someone on. So it was a very, very cool experience to see all that as you're going through the streets of LA, for sure.
So I saw you at mile 7 and my goal was to then get to the half marathon mark. But I realized when I got in my car, you know, being in downtown LA, there's 26,000 runners, add in spectators, volunteers, aid stations. We're looking at like 100,000 people floating around LA for.
Yeah.
So traffic was pretty bad. And I could see you on Life 360. You were carrying your phone. And so I could see exactly where you were and put it up to the map. And I was like, dude, I got to like make my way to mile 19. So 19, just to familiarize you with the course, 19 is where there begins this really interesting out and back. And I say interesting because it can be frustrating for some runners, because you pass the finish line, essentially. Like if you look, as you're coming onto mile 19, if you look left, like you can see just down the street, that's where everyone is finishing.
Yeah. It's actually right at 18.
Or 18.
Because it's 4 out and then you come 4 back.
Yes, that's right. 4 out, 4 back. So I saw you at 19, but 18 is where it starts. Yeah. So at 18, you go away from the finish line, from the explosion of excitement and everyone cheering all those people into the finish line. You run away from that and you go further and further down the road, and then the road kind of twists around and it wraps around and you're like, when is this going to turn back towards the finish line? But it's nice for spectators.
Yeah, it's perfect for spectators.
It's perfect for spectators. So I thought I'll just make my way to that section.
Yeah.
Because then I'll be able to see him a couple times. So I have to get on the freeway in downtown LA. And it took me almost 40 minutes from mile 7 to then try and find a spot. Now, LA Marathon, they're very organized. Their runner's guide is like, I don't know, 20, 30 pages. Mm-hmm. You download this PDF and they tell you the best places to park. You know, they want you to park at these parking structures and this is how close you can get to the finish line. I've been racing long enough to know, Sally, don't go to those spots because after the race, it will be a nightmare to get out, which I was very happy that I didn't. But I kind of know my way around LA a little bit. And so I figured out I can go park in this area away from the race course and I'll just run in. That's not a big deal.
Yeah.
I think at the end of the day, I logged like 7 or 8 miles so on the course. And I'm looking on Life 360. I finally find a spot. I was so stoked. And the street that I was on ran straight into
dead end of the race.
And it was just maybe under a mile. And I look on Life 360 and I'm thinking you're a lot further out. And then I zoom in and I was like, oh my gosh, I need to take off. I need to start running because I'm going to miss him. Mm. I think at one point I was going like 640 pace, like running down the street. And, you know, and I'm passing a ton of people that are going to spectate. You know, they're making their way there. They got their signs,
their lawn chairs.
They got their family and their strollers.
A cooler.
You know, yeah. And I'm flying down and it's bumper to bumper traffic. I have to get across some really busy intersections too. And I have my phone open because I'm looking at Life 360 and I'm like, oh my gosh, we just might intersect at the exact same time. Well, Billy and Hillary were also down there. Mm-hmm. So they're messaging me, where are you? Where are you? Like, let's meet up. And I'm looking at your dot moving across on the Life 360 map. And I'm like, I cannot miss him here.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen you in 12 miles.
Yeah.
And I was just praying for you and I was so concerned about you. I didn't know how you were feeling. I wanted to get to you. So I got to mile 19 and within 90 seconds, I see your yellow hat mm-hmm. coming at me. And if you guys followed my stories on that day, I was jumping up and down, like squealing like a little 5-year-old girl. I was so happy to see you. But I knew as you got closer to me that you were in a world of pain.
Yeah, it was. But it was weird because I did not, out of all the people at mile 19, it was so loud, so crazy.
It was so crowded too.
Very, very noisy.
Very different from mile 7.
Yeah. I didn't see you, but out of all the noises, I heard you yelling. I was like, there's no way. So I like, and I was like, oh no, where's she at? So I started looking and I saw you. But it was so funny. I was able to hear you.
That yellow yelling. Hat, the shade of yellow.
Yeah, it stands out.
It stands out.
Yeah,
amazing.
Well, I was able to find you so easily too with all the people around.
That's why, because I almost wore the black one that you were wearing. And I was like, oh no, I'm going to wear the yellow one. And it was cool because we saw a lot of Chew Strong hats out on the course that day, which was amazing.
Yeah, a guy actually, I think I told you where he was like running up behind me. And he's like, dude, he comes up behind me, he's like, dude, nice hat, you know? And then I look over and he's got the same hat on as also. And he's like, what, Eddie, what's up, dude? Yeah, nice hat. And then he just like sprints by me. But anyways, it was kind of cool.
I love that. Yeah, it was super cool. But I knew in that moment that you were really struggling. I think I had, so I kind of made it a point before you even started to send you a series of audio texts.
Yeah.
And I just those wanted cool. to talk to you throughout the race. And I said, when you hear a text message come in, I don't want you to be distracted and feel like you have to be reading these text messages. They're just going to be audio texts. You just push play and just listen to it as you run along.
Yeah, those are super helpful. I mean, they were Sally-esque, right? You were very like coach inspirational, but like, you know, you empathized and you knew you've ran so many races and marathons where you know how people feel at certain points, and you know, especially thinking back to your first one, but they were very poignant and very direct. And this is the mile you're in, Eddie. You know, you're probably dealing with this, but you know, I'm proud of you. You keep pushing through, and I'll see you at this mile. So those were cool. Those were cool little moments of encouragement for me to kind of push through. And that was neat to have those in my ear as I was running. But yeah, I think mile 20, right after I saw you, it was like the worst, right? Like it was so incredibly painful.
What were you feeling that was painful? Was it just the soleus in the hip, or was now, did you just feel like you're having a breakdown?
Yeah, you talked about it and everybody else has talked about it. There's like that bonking that you hit mile 20 and there's six left and it's like, that's where it gets real. And in theory, I kind of knew about it, but it was, you know, being in that actual moment, I really understood what you and what everybody would say about that mile, because it was so rough. Like those last 6 miles, like I looked back at like my Strava and I was like, I felt like through the hip pain and the soleus thing that came up, you know, I was at the half marathon mark right around 2:02, which
it was 1:59.
Was it?
Yeah.
I thought it was 2:02, but
I just looked at your results.
So I was like right around, like right where I wanted to be. I was like, oh, you know, feeling good and pushing through some pain. But like once I hit mile 20, like I just went downhill so fast. Like I walked so much, I stretched, and you know, I kept like going to the curb and like pushing my, you know, toe up and heel down, and it was, and every time I would go to like, you know, pick my right leg up and try to stretch it, I would feel like the back of my thigh like starting to cramp up. So I was dealing with a lot of cramping. Just my legs were just so locked up and tight. Mm-hmm. And it was just very, very painful to even like to push through, you know, which a pace that I was wanting to do. And every time I looked down, I was like, man, I'm going so slow, but I could not get enough momentum, you know, to get my legs moving faster than I wanted them. So, but yeah, you sent me a text around mile 21, I think. And you said some things like, you know, you're probably in a ton of pain right now and you're probably wanting to stop and quit. And pretty much everything that you said, I wanted to do and was going through at that exact second. So you pretty much nailed it. But man, yeah, it was very, very painful. Yeah. I was telling you, there's muscles in my body that I didn't know I had that I was like, how is that like seizing up? Like, I didn't even know that that's a muscle, you know, just weird, weird things. Mm-hmm.
It started to warm up in those last 4 miles. And I would say, even judging from your calorie intake, you definitely didn't have enough calories.
Yeah.
I think maybe we thought there'd be a little bit more calories on the course. And, but yeah, you definitely needed some more calories. That always helps with the cramping.
Yeah.
You know, all those glucose stores they're being used up, and they're looking for something.
Yeah.
Sound like you had some good electrolytes, but we just need to balance that out with some calories too.
Yep.
This episode of Chew Strong is brought to you by Manucora Honey. And if you have been a listener for any stretch of time, you know how much Eddie and I love honey. So we are very excited about this one. It is getting colder. It is time to think about presents for the people you love, and the miracle of nature just fell on my lap at the perfect time. And that's a rare super honey that is 100% natural and has some unique properties. Manucora makes Manuka honey, a single origin honey that comes from New Zealand, where the bees only feed on the nectar of the Manuka tea tree, making honey that is pure, rich, and complex, with a creamier texture that is on a completely different level from the normal honey you find at the supermarket. You can use it as you would any other honey, but what puts the super in Manuka honey is that it's super rich in antioxidants and prebiotics, 3 times more compared to regular honey. On top of that, it contains an antibacterial compound called MGO that can be found exclusively in Manuka honey. The bottom line is that these nutrients really support your optimal immune and digestive health, and it's delicious. This is the perfect way to treat myself with something that is going to keep me strong through the colder months, and the perfect gift for the people I love to keep them sweet and healthy too. The 850 plus honey has this creamy caramel texture that melts in your mouth and is unlike anything I've ever tried. I can grab a spoonful out of a jar, which I've been known to do many a times. I can put it in my favorite beverage or squeeze some honey out on some toast or oatmeal. I personally like honey peanut butter sandwiches. So delicious. If you head to manucora.com/Sally, you can get $25 off their starter kit, which comes with the MGO 850 Plus Manuka Honey, a free travel pack honey stick, a free wooden spoon, and also a free guidebook. It's the perfect gift for a loved one during this season. Now, I love the jar and squeeze bottle, but the extra pack of compostable honey sticks is perfect for whenever you're on the go. You can bring them with you when you're traveling or if you need a quick snack running errands, and they're the perfect energy boost if you're out for a run or at the gym, especially in this time of year. That's manukora.com/Sally to get $25 off your starter kit. This is just the ultimate honey. Indulge and try some honey with superpowers from Manucora. You know, one of the things that we knew going in was you didn't have an ideal buildup as far as a training plan went. So, right. You know, I think that we probably would have had more long runs in your buildup, which just, it gives you confidence in two ways. One, it gives you just confidence mentally, like, okay, I've done 16 miles a few times now. Okay. Sure. I've done 18 miles a couple of times. Like, all right, I've done 20 miles, 22, 23, like depending on how much time you have in your training program. I've talked about this numerous times. The aerobic based training is the most important because that is what allows you to then handle the intensity that builds up as you move through a training program and then for the race. But aerobic base training is also one of the most difficult. It's not glamorous, but that's where we spent probably the majority of your training was as much aerobic as possible. But we always had to, we would push you and then we would have to pull you back.
Yeah, I felt like that was the downfall because I felt like, I don't know, I didn't look back at like the heart rate stuff, but I felt like I was never like gassed. I was never like pushing hard. Mm-hmm. I was never like, oh, I'm out of breath. I need to, you know, it was never, ever that. It felt very comfortable, very easy. It was just that my legs like just didn't have enough oomph, you know, didn't have enough volume on them, you know, going into it, which I think that was the downfall ultimately. Mm-hmm. But it's so funny because that course has a lot more like hills than I thought it would have, especially at the end, which was very cruel because you do that out four and back four, and it was like a lot more hills in that last 8 miles.
It's a cruel way to finish a race. Yeah. I'll just say that. It is not, you have this little downhill, which actually doesn't feel that great at the end. And then you have to climb up to the finish line. And it is just
granted, it wasn't like a massive climb, but it was enough to be like, okay, this is not fair.
It feels like Mount Everest for a lot of people. I mean, you know, you're cheering. I just cheered all day long for everyone. But there's always this part of me, because I empathize so much. Like in the last couple of miles, like you kind of don't want people cheering for you anymore. You just want everyone to be quiet and leave you alone. And I just need to work through this and get to that finish line. You saw a lot of turmoil and on people's faces and discomfort as they were making their way, especially the last mile. It was rough.
Yeah.
But I think also you and I had talked about that. I think that's why we don't see a lot of elites choose LA as their that race course. Of choice. It's so hilly. There's so many hills. And, you know, it's not, you're not going to you know, most often aren't going to set a PR there. Or, and it's really close to Boston, the Boston Marathon too. So
yeah, well, it was funny because when I was in that last 8 miles and I was like mentally like, this sucks. This is the worst. I want to quit. I'm just going to walk. I'm blah, blah, blah. I was, you know, doing that whole thing.
And then you started getting passed by people wearing golf shoes.
No. But it was like that wrestle of like, this is so painful right now. And I started thinking back like, yeah, I probably should have changed up my training runs a little bit more, like those easy coastal runs like that I would do every single time, the same flat at sea level, no hills, like probably bit me in the butt a little bit at the end there when I was like, I should probably have, you know, done a couple more runs on some hills to kind of get ready for this. But
I think that was what your body could handle.
Yeah, you're right.
I think also what your schedule could handle was you just run from home. And hit that course and it worked. It made you consistent.
Yeah, I did. You're right.
And so that I think that's really what helped you. I know you say you don't feel like you had the strength and the durability in your legs, but like your overall fitness is genuinely what got you through.
Yeah.
A lot of that.
Yeah.
You know, had that aerobic capacity, that ability to be on your feet for a long time, and. You know, we had to tailor your training so many different ways in order to help you be consistent. So, I think your, you know, your journey is, it's unique, but it's also like so relatable. A lot of people are listening thinking, yeah, that's how my first marathon was too. Like it was very uncomfortable. And it shows you if and when you want to do the marathon again.
Yeah.
All the things that you can improve upon. It's kind of exciting knowing like, okay, like I went the distance. I'm going to make a few tweaks here and there. I'm going to look out for this. I bet I could run a lot faster.
Yeah. I mean,
I bet I have a more enjoyable experience.
Yeah. You just go into those things, right? You don't know what to expect. Like even though I've seen the marathon through your lens, I've seen ultras, I've seen like, but unless you've actually done it yourself, you just don't know, right? Like you don't know, you can study, you can research, you can plan, you can train, but unless you've done it, you just really don't know like how it's going to pan out and how it's going to go. And so, yeah, it's just, it's fun to kind of learn and experience it firsthand, what goes on and how your body reacts and how it handles the situation. So,
we had Billy Yang, we had the Liebers.
Yeah.
Alon and Gabby, they found you at mile like 24.
No. Yeah, I was 20. We had two miles left because, Elon ran it in what, like under three?
2:40.
Yeah. Super fast, just rips through. And then he jumps in and started running with me. He's like, all right. He started like coaching me. He's all right,
so
what you're going to see, you know, coming up, he's like, there's some downhill, but don't, you know, there's definitely some uphill coming up. Like it's kind of mean, but, you know, just want to let you know. And, you know, I go, dude, I'm hurting so bad right now. And he goes, hey, you got a lot more respect for your wife right now, huh? I go, dude, big time. But yeah, it was cool to see, you know, them, you know, cheering me on. And I mean, when I saw Billy and Hillary, that was the moment I just wanted to stop. Like 24, like I was like, dude, I am done. And Billy's like, how much, what's on your watch? What are you at? What's your time? And I showed him and he's like, oh dude, what's Sally's time? What was her marathon time? He's like, and I go, oh, I can't, you know, I told him and she's, oh dude, you got this. You're going to beat her. Come on, let's just keep going. And
he made sure that happened. Yeah. So my first LA marathon over 20 years ago when, I had no idea what I was doing. Eddie was spectator.
You know what? I did some research and I have some results right here that I'm going to share.
Okay.
From 2003, March, I think 2nd, Sally McCray, age 23, bib number 12614, LA Marathon, chip time 4:25:35.
Yep.
Pretty legit. First time ever running a marathon.
And I finished that thing.
Good old times.
Remember my toes were bloody. I had blisters.
Yeah.
I couldn't walk down the stairs as a teacher. I was on the second story without holding on to the rail for a solid week or two. And I loved it. I was just happy as a clam that I finished that thing.
You did. Look, there were 17,000 people that ran that one that year. And you got 3,000 out of that. That's pretty good.
My second marathon, I went on to qualify for Boston. So
I know. I'm telling you.
Will you be qualifying for Boston at your second marathon?
Let's talk about this one right now. Let's talk about how I beat you by 2 minutes.
2 minutes.
Literally. Exactly 2 minutes.
What were your results in there? What number were you?
I don't know. I didn't pull that up. I didn't care. I got 4:23:36. You had 4:25:35. So I barely beat you. But
I love it. That's what the yangs were not there though. You may have just like walked
it in and been like crap.
And then been bummed. But like you finish and there's a couple things to be happy about.
Yeah.
There's a couple things that you could be very proud of. One of them being beating my time.
That's right.
What's up now?
What's up
your
now,
trajectory
Sally?
Is already better than mine.
I am. Sky's the limit now.
So 50-mile race, here you come.
You went on to become a Nike pro. I am right there with you. I am right there.
Well, man. I found you. I found you. It was like half mile to go.
Yeah.
Or less than a mile.
It was less.
And then I sprinted ahead when it was like 0.2. Because then they shut it down to spectators.
You can't get past,
it's all VIP and it's probably like brands and VIP and all that. It's all fenced off and there's some stands as you go to the finish line. So, but I was just bent on finding you. I was like, so often when the kids race or when you've done your half marathons, I never get to see you guys finish. I never see Mackenzie finish because I'm always like on the backside of her track, like screaming her in and like, you know, because there's something that I know as a competitor, when you see the actual finish line, I mean, it doesn't matter who's cheering for you. Like is like the greatest motivation.
Big time.
That's the loudest cheering. It's everything that you need.
Yep.
When you can't see the finish line though, and it feels hard, like, and someone comes alongside you or someone's cheering for you in that moment, and they're just like, dude, I believe you can do this. Like, that there's something about that that's a little bit better. So I was like, I need to find him when he can't see the finish line. And so I think it was like 25 and a half or 25.8 when I found you. And I could tell you were hurting so much. And you said that to me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm hurting.
Yeah.
And I was looking at you though. I was like, despite all that, like you had a pretty efficient, you were efficient in that pain, in that running gait. And then I sprinted ahead, another like quarter mile. I was like right before you hit 26, the 26 mile mark, because they have the sign up that says like 0.2, and which is in some ways it's exciting. It's also demoralizing. You're just like, I really hate that 0.2. I really don't like it.
So
I wish it was just 26 miles. But I came up again and was cheering you at that point too. And I was so emotional, so emotional, just seeing everything you had battled through, knowing that you had trained for months for this race, you know, a solid 6 months and had given everything that you could give despite all the obstacles. I'm so proud of you. And I want to know what was going through your mind in those final 10 steps. And as you crossed the finish line,
the final 10 steps, I was honestly so relieved that it was over. Like that was like, oh my gosh, like I can walk. I can just walk this in now.
It's over.
Yeah, it's over. It's done.
It's
and
over.
Just wanted to complete it and finish it, check that off. And that's kind of what I was thinking. I was like, I'm just stoked that this is done. Yeah.
It does feel good and it's amazing what washes over you after the finish line. And I think this is something we've talked about on the podcast before and something I encourage people in when they are in discomfort, when they are in pain, when they're frustrated, is really focus on the fact that when you get to that finish line, a lot of this is going to subside, like significantly right away.
Yeah.
Because your mind is playing a part of it. You are battling your mind to not focus so much on the pain that is screaming at you. And at the same time, you're battling to get to the finish line as best you can. So you're kind of like having this war. And that's why I say don't give the pain and the frustration and the discomfort so much attention. focus so much on the finish line and focus on the story that you want to tell. What is the story you want to tell? And it's just so exciting to hear the story that you're telling. And that is, it was difficult from the first mile until the last step.
Mm-hmm.
But then the elation and the joy that you had as soon as you crossed that finish line, knowing now it is over.
Yeah. 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 It was a huge relief. Mm-hmm. That chocolate milk never tasted so good. As soon as I drank that, it's like, oh, yes. Yeah, it was good to be done with it. So
you walked through that finishing shoot. It was a long shoot. Uh-huh. There's a lot of food, a lot of drink that they're passing toward you. I mean, you probably have to walk like a quarter mile before you're actually like spit out into the street.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like as you walked through that finishing shoot, just looking around at everyone? You know, everyone's got their blankets. They're passing out those you know, those space blankets, those emergency blankets. They put that medal around your neck. I mean, you're a marathon finisher, Eddie.
That's right. That's right.
Something that a small percentage of humans will ever say that they have accomplished. And
well, I do want to thank you for coaching me. I know, although it wasn't ideal in terms of coaching me, but putting a little plan together and getting me outside and for these last few months to know what I was supposed to do and banking on your experience as a coach, like that was cool to have. And definitely thankful for that to get me that start line as best as I could, as healthy as I could. So I do appreciate that. And I do appreciate you out there yelling my name and cheering your brains out for me, which was fun to see you. So yeah, it was very cool experience and stoked that I did it. And yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. The finish for me as I went to go find you was probably the most overwhelming finish line experience ever.
Mm.
Because what I realized was, one, and people who were at the LA Marathon are going to be like shaking their heads in agreement here, but there was very bad cell phone reception. I'm hearing it as I'm walking through crowds and hundreds and hundreds of people, everyone looking for their runners. And what I don't realize is that as I'm going up this street is that the mass of people waiting for their runner, it meanders in and out of buildings.
Yeah.
Like you take a left turn and then a right turn and then you get spit out into a bigger group of people. I mean, I was literally standing among thousands of people and realizing I don't have cell phone reception. I have like 8% left battery.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, how are we going to find each other?
Yeah.
We didn't have a meeting spot.
I know.
I guess I just wasn't thinking. I thought it would be just one spot where people could meet.
But yeah.
People were exiting several different
areas. Yeah, there's different ways you can leave the chute of
you
know, different streets.
Yes.
So I'm like, I don't know which one to go to because I couldn't get a hold of you.
And I think I tried calling like 8 times. And then I'm like, okay, wait. I have been cheering all day, and throughout the day, I would try to remember people. I recognize people that I knew, people that were wearing specific costumes, or people that just stood out to me. So I'm starting to see really specific people. I'm like, oh man, all these people were like half hour ahead of Eddie.
Yeah.
Is it taking them that long
to walk through
to get out of the finishing chute? Or like, is it way further down than I thought? So I stand there for like 5-10 minutes and I'm looking at all these people that I had seen quite a time before that. And I'm like, well, I wonder if these people were waiting and they're enjoying some snacks and some drinks somewhere else. So I start following the line like backwards. I see that it goes back behind this building and I make a right turn and boom, it opens up to another 3,000-4,000 people.
Yeah.
And there are banners and balloons and there's music and you can tell there's a beer garden off to the side. And then I'm like, okay, well, where are the blankets? I need to see people walking with blankets because Eddie's got to be in there somewhere.
Yeah.
So I'm watching and I'm like, oh, okay, it's over there. So I start walking toward this other chute where runners are coming out and I continue to call you on my phone. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to keep dialing and dialing and dialing. It's got to get through. And then it finally got through to you.
Mm-hmm.
And while you and I were talking, I realized that we are standing 12 feet apart from each other. And it's so so funny because I'm describing where I am. I'm like, there's this building. You're like, yeah.
I see
and
it.
And you're describing that building. And then I'm like, I kind of feel like I hear him. And I look down and you're sitting on the curb like 12 feet away from me.
So funny.
I was so happy to see you. I was like, this is the best. I'm like, we must be married.
Yeah.
Because we just kind of like, we just found each other in this mass of thousands of people. I kept saying over and over to you, I was like, I can't believe I found you.
I know.
Like, this could have been like an hour like search, and then my phone could have died. Like, I did not have much phone left. And so I then had to break it to Eddie. I sat there with him for about 10 minutes and he's, you know, having his snacks and he was just so happy. You were so happy. I could just tell you were relieved.
Yeah, it was a relief for sure.
The state that you were in was the direct opposite of the state that you were in at mile 19. And this is so important for our listeners to understand. This is the gold in the discomfort, in the hard parts in those races, in the training. Is that things change.
Yep.
Seasons change. How you feel changes. Things subside. But when you are in it, you don't feel that way. You feel like it's lasting forever.
Mm-hmm.
Those last 2 miles felt like an eternity.
Yep.
And if I were to tell you, you know, in a few weeks from now, like, hey, go run 2 miles, you'd be like, okay, lame, right? Yeah. Like, I've run a marathon. But it's amazing how something so simple as 2 miles can feel like the hardest thing in the world, depending on where it is in the journey.
Yep.
And so what I love so much was just the expression on your face when I found you. You were so... You were just my typical steady Eddie. You were calm and peaceful and like not, you weren't to be bothered. You know, you were having your electrolytes. You had some Siete chips. And you're sitting in the shade and it was like, what a great day. And I just, I love that so much because I think sometimes we get so discouraged in the discomfort. We get discouraged in the pain that the only way that we can understand it to stop is by quitting, is by stepping off the course and saying, this just isn't for me.
Yep.
But what happens when we choose to keep going despite the discomfort? What happens when we press on towards that finish line with great hope that no matter what happens, no matter what I feel, I know this is eventually going to subside. I know this is eventually going to fade away. Mm. And I know that the feeling of crossing that finish line is a far greater feeling and reward than me quitting right now.
Yep.
The feeling of quitting, oh man, that doesn't feel good for any of us. And all of us have been there. All of us had moments in our life where we've quit on something or someone or on a goal or where we're just like, I can't handle this anymore. And we learn from that. I mean, that's how we grow.
Yep.
And, you know, I think back on the races where I've had DNFs in my career. And after it happens, I think, what if I would have kept on going? What actually would have happened to me? Like, what if I had ended up in the hospital? Would I ended my career? And who knows, maybe in some of those instances, it would have been pretty severe.
Mm.
And we are the ones that get to own that decision and make that choice for ourselves. And I think that is what has been so fun about this journey for both of us. You know, I look at the journey of completing your first marathon is very difficult, and yours was filled with setbacks all along the way. I think of the 200-mile Grand Slam, how so often I thought, I should just go for this next year when I'm all healed up and strong. Yeah. Why should I suffer and be in so much pain every single race?
Mm-hmm.
We learn so much on either side that we choose.
Mm-hmm.
We learn a lot about ourselves, whatever that choice is. There's going to be a lesson in learning if we choose to look for the lessons. And I think that seeing you push from mile one to 26.2 through discomfort for 4 hours and 23 minutes to achieve the goal that you set out to do, I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I'm glad it's done.
Yeah. So I say, along with everyone in the Choose Strong community, as you have gotten hundreds of messages coming through my social media, because I did post all this stuff on my stories on Instagram.
Yes.
Congratulations, Edward McCray. You are a marathon finisher.
Yes, thank you. I do want to thank those that have reached out and sent messages and said some nice things on Strava and all those different places. I appreciate you guys even taking the time to care. So I definitely want to thank you guys. You guys are rock stars.
Your daughter was a little jealous of all the kudos and comments you got.
Oh, yeah. You know? Well, yep.
You and Mackenzie are Strava competitors. And it is really funny when I see the two of you huddled around your phones talking about kudos and comments and titles on your Strava. I don't participate as much, but it's really fun. Cool to see all the support you got there Strava. Super cool. Eddie, what was after you finished, I broke the news to you that we were parked a mile and a half, 1.7 miles away.
1.7 miles away.
From the finish line. At first,
I was like, you know what? Let's walk it. I'll be good.
You have the best attitude.
I need to walk. Like, I can't be sitting here anymore.
I tried to get all scientific. I'm like, this is great. We don't want the blood to pool. We want
the lactic acid moving.
Let's get the blood flowing and we'll walk. And inside, I'm like, dude, we have a freaking long hike to the car. And my car's on an uphill. Literally. And so your good vibes was like so impressive. So we start walking and we get about 0.7 in, and out of the blue, we see this guy on a bike.
Homeboy was a godsend.
Such a godsend. It was a sponsored service that Brooks Running. I think Brooks was the big sponsor of LA
Marathon.
ASICS
was.
Or was it ASICS?
Yeah, but Brooks.
Okay, but Brooks was there in some capacity. Yeah. So Brooks sponsored these, what do they call those? It's kind of like a little trolley.
Trolley bike.
Yeah, a trolley bike. So there's a rider, and then there's, the two-seater in the back. And he was coming at us, and I never do this.
You flagged him down.
You and I have never done this. I mean, we've never done it in whether we're traveling or just for fun.
Because we're always too good for that. We can walk.
Yeah, we can walk around town.
I'm not gonna
we don't
take
need
a bike.
You. What?
I don't need
I'm
someone
not
to take
sit
me
back as someone else cycles. I'll get my own bike. I'm seeing this guy. I'm like, this would be a great time to ask for a ride
right now,
so that Eddie does not have to actually see how far and treacherous our car is, because it's also massive traffic all around us. I mean,
it's right by the finish line.
It's right
so,
by
yeah,
the finish
tons
line. It's in downtown LA. Like, it's traffic jam. Yeah. I mean, so people are honking. I mean, it was starting to get hotter too. So now it was really starting to heat up. I'm getting like a little nervous. So I see this young guy coming at us, and I'm like, "Hey, do you get rides?" And he kind of like kept riding a little bit.
Yeah.
And he's like, I give rides around. And I'm like, is he going to slow down? So he slows down and he kind of looks back. He's like, do you guys want me to take you somewhere? I'm like, yes.
Yes, please.
Yes. And I don't even think that you agreed right away. I think you were kind of like,
Well, like, you made it seem like it was like, that's not that far. It's like a mile or so.
Not a big deal.
Man,
but I was
glad
like,
we
no,
did it.
Let's get in. Oh my gosh. I mean, the ride alone
was
almost
20 minutes. I felt the ride took forever.
It did. And then it became a parade because people were hanging out of their cars, waving at
Sally.
Us and Eddie.
Yeah.
And that was super fun.
That was
but
fun.
It was such a gift.
Yeah, that was
because we were
huge.
Kind of in a random spot. And this guy, he was also riding on the wrong side of the road, right?
Yep.
Oh, no, he was riding on the right side. And then he had to cross.
He crossed
across
over.
The busy section. But
yeah,
it
was
cool because he ended up being from Huntington Beach too.
Yeah, he's a local guy.
So we talked about
to us.
Huntington Beach and we had a good chat with him. But yeah, Eddie got to kick his legs up and this guy
nice.
Rode the bike up the hill.
Yeah, props
to
him.
Took us to
man.
Our car.
That was
and
awesome.
It was awesome.
Very grateful for that.
And we drove straight to Burger Lounge
in so
Costa
good.
Mesa off 17th Street.
Yes.
And Eddie had a bacon blue
bacon
cheeseburger.
So good. So good.
Some fries,
some onion rings and fries. Man, so good.
And then that night went to his favorite restaurant at Ola.
And then Oh, yes, I did.
Tacos. Chips and salsa.
Did it right.
You did the refueling.
Yes. Yep.
Did the celebration.
Yeah, it was good.
I'll tell you, that was an all-around weekend to remember.
That was a long weekend.
Isaiah turned 16. Mackenzie smashed the mile race at Sound Running. And yes, you ran your first marathon.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a long weekend. Good weekend.
It was a great weekend.
Very long.
Yeah.
Yep.
Super awesome.
Good memories.
Eddie, is there anything as we wrap it up,
put a bow
on this podcast. Is there anything that I left out or that you would like to share about your marathon experience with your friends here?
No, that was it. I think just recapping the day, the event was it was awesome. Good times. There it is, the bib.
If you're watching on YouTube, I am holding up Eddie's filthy singlet.
Smell that thing.
With the bib still attached to it.
Oh, so
it's
gross.
It's stiff, dude. This is a sturdy singlet.
That's so gross.
Sturdy and singlet should not go in the same sentence.
Yeah. No.
Much salt. So much salt on the back.
Oh.
Number 13623.
There it is.
Eddie, while we were there sitting here, I had purchased your finishing pick.
No, you did not.
And I bought the virtual one. I thought it was an instant download. And I was very disappointed to learn in the middle of the podcast that it takes 24 hours to process. So here I thought I was going to surprise you at the end of the podcast and show you your finishing pick coming along the finish line. But we will have to save that and post it on the Choose Strong
podcast
Instagram.
Can't wait to see
where
it.
Where people can see that. But yeah, that is your first post-race gift. Friends, wow. Thank you so much for listening today. If you are still out running, we just want to encourage you in every step that you're taking right now. It matters. Yep. It's going to pay off. And just like Eddie learned in his first marathon, every step did matter. Mm-hmm. And all that training you put in, it wasn't in vain. In fact, your body was overall strong. And because it was strong, it was also able to put up with some of the physical discomfort that you were feeling. So remember that if you're lifting, riding, or running, every minute that you put into your training is valuable. And we also just want to encourage you guys, you know, if you're having one of those days where it's like, all right, I have so much on my to-do list, I can't even see straight. Remember, something is better than nothing. Done is better than perfect. And you just don't know what is around the corner. So keep doing the work and keep choosing strong in all that you do.